Whoa. Welcome to The Bag Drop, Untold Stories in Golf. I'm your host, Matt Considine, here with our co-host, the professor, Kevin Moore, Dr. Kevin Moore. Doctor, how are you this morning?
Good. You are full of energy. I'm picking that up. It's giving me a little pickup. You know, I'm a little tired, but...
When you don't sleep, you just replace it with caffeine. And that's where the energy comes from.
What's your caffeine of choice? Just straight coffee? Is that what you're
actually
doing?
It's funny you bring this up, and I do owe a shout out to our friends at Dew Sweeper Coffee Company, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Thank you for free ad here. Thank you for your supply of my caffeine dose this morning. But let me ask you this: espresso beans, Can you treat as normal coffee?
I mean, I have. Mean just like put in like a typical drip machine that's going.
Whoa. I'm not that fancy, professor. We're not dripping anything.
Not pour.
I just got Cuisinart, chops it up, does it all. I program it each morning.
Yeah, and it just drips water down through. It's got the little filter.
I guess it is.
Not pour over. You're thinking
pour over. I'm thinking pour over. Sorry.
Normal drip machine put in there. I've done it before. I mean, I'm guessing, I'm going to visit Australia this summer where they are the coffee snobs. And so I'm pumped because coffee is definitely one of my things. I would assume it tastes fine. I would assume there's some reasons you shouldn't, like the type of bean matters and whatever and how it's roasted, but sure. Yeah.
I've been trying it. My wife, Becca has a theory that it needs to be compressed. And so we're not getting as much caffeine intake.
How you make an espresso shot. Yeah, you tamper it and do all that.
Right. So she has that theory, but it's smooth, man, as a coffee. Like, it tastes great. Dew Sweeper Coffee. Check them out.
Nice.
Let me get my thank you to Titleist in before we get diving in this show. I'm excited for this show today, Kevin. For all of our listeners, this kind of emerged from a text chain with the professor and one of our other buddies. Shout out Dr. Nico Daris. I'm going to call today's episode The Price is Right. Or if you're a Happy Gilmore fan, The Price is Wrong, Bob. we're going to talk about the prices in golf and what's overpriced, what's underpriced, what's appropriately priced, right? I think we'll have a lot of different takes on this one. But thanks to Titleist for continued support of New Club Golf Society, continued support of this show, The Bag Drop Podcast. Professor, we were out in Northern California for our winter meeting, and I was driving it across the planet. Unfortunately, that may have something to do with my TSR that had not arrived until 45 minutes after I left for the airport. I was hoping to have my new rig in the bag. Didn't happen. But I got to say this. It's been, I don't know, about 6 months of my Titleist T100s. I went through the fitting process. You know, the Titleist approach to fitting, if I was going to sum it up, it's three things: distance control, dispersion control, and your descent angle. And I learned a lot from those guys in that process. It was a lot of rain, so we had the ball in hand for majority of our winter meeting this year. So although I wasn't in the fairway, kind of felt like I was. But dude, I was throwing some lasers at flagsticks. I mean, everything too, Kevin. The wedges to the 4-iron, to the 6, 7, 8. It was a stripe show. So thanks to our friends at Titleist for that fitting. Thanks for getting me dialed in my T100s. The T150s, T200s, T350s. I saw recently that Mr. Will Zalatoris has a T350. That's a game improvement club at its core. He has that in the bag, as do a couple other guys.
His favorite club in the bag, I believe, is what he says.
I think it is. Really fun club to hit. I hit it quite a bit. Now I'm thinking about throwing one in. But any club, getting fit is, can't recommend it enough. And get fit with certified people. You know, the Titleist fitters are all around the country. You can find them pretty much in every major market, and they'll get you dialed in. So thanks to Titleist for the support of today's show. Professor, what fun fact do you have for us today?
Quick one. Leap day was recently, in the last probably month when this was released. Some cool facts about leap day in terms of the business of it. It's not really treated as a legal work day for a lot of companies in a lot of places. So this has two implications. One, when you're you know, sign up for employment with your workplace, they might not actually have it as an option on your birthday. So you have to choose either the 28th or 1st as your listed birthday within the company. Whatever, not a big deal, right? You still want to get your cake or whatever they give you your birthday. So you're going to want to do that. But the other one is a lot of people work for free on leap day. So if you think about how your paycheck is calculated and worked out, especially if it's done out on a monthly basis, a lot of times that leap year, the leap year day of February 29th is not going to be included, right? So your other years, you're working for some amount, but you are working an extra day on leap year typically. So that should be taken account. So if you like to be a little thorn in your company's side, you can take a look at your paychecks and see if they incorporate that extra day that you get every, 4 years for February. So check that out.
Yeah. If there's any staff of, new club listening, there will not be a extension to that. I'm not gonna be the first to test those waters. I'm sorry. It sounds good, Professor, but hey, we're running a business here, man.
You know, being a professor, I'm supposed to be liberal, I think. So if any new club workers out there listening, you know, as an unpaid new club employee, I'm happy to lead a unionization effort.
Yeah. The new club's union is forming as we speak. No, that's fascinating. Here's another question for you. My brother owns Norca Beverage Company. I'm filled with free ads off the top of the show. Norca Beverage, this year, he revitalized the brand. It's 100 years old.
This is the 100 year?
Yeah. 100 year anniversary of Norca Sparkling Beverage. Norca is Akron spelled backwards for those Northeast Ohioans that are proud of our town. But I thought about that. I was like, wait, this is a leap year. How old are you really? Is there any change in this? Like, can he still celebrate 100 years if it's on a leap year? Is it 104 years? I just don't know how that math works out. I need the professor to help me with it.
Yeah, we just have one extra day every 4 years. So no, it's still a year is still considered a calendar year. Just some years have 364 and some have, or 364, 365, I think is, I shouldn't know that off the top of my head.
Kevin, yeah, I wish you could hear a quarter of the dumb thoughts that come into my head. I mean, I don't vocalize half of them on this show, but that's why you're here. No, that's just an extra day, you moron.
No, you do have some cultures that count years differently. So like you turn two after your first year of birth, right? So you actually like think of a way you turn, like here you turn one when that one is signifying I've lived for 1 year. Is what that's signifying where, other cultures treat it. When you say you're two, you're in your second year.
Yes.
So it's counted differently sometimes, but you can't get around the fact that they've been around they've existed for 100 years and in our counting system, they're going into their 101st year.
Right.
Can't get around that.
But, no, you can't.
But maybe you can make up the Michael. We know he doesn't listen. You can say, the math professor said, you're not actually 100. So I can change my mind if he sends me merch because I love merch. Despite the complaints we're going to give during this podcast, I love me some merch.
Yeah, he's got. I'm kind of helping out in that front. New Club's merchandise is infiltrating the beverage industry, so you'll see some cool stuff from Norca Beverage this year on 100 years. Congrats to Norca. Hopefully, Michael's listening. Let's get to The Price is Right, shall we?
Let's do it.
So we're talking overpriced, underpriced. I think that's the structure, right? Is that what we want to go with today?
Yeah, that's fine.
Where do you want to start? Do you want to go back and forth between things that are overpriced and underpriced and go back and forth between us?
Sure. I think I'd only gone into complaint mode with overpriced, but I'm sure I can be spontaneous and underpriced as well.
I think there's a propensity for all of us to be negative, right? And so it's harder. When I was putting together my list, it is much harder to go with the underpriced things, especially in the game of golf. But there's a couple ways to think about this too. I mean, you and I always go to you've helped me really critically think about concepts and different things. Like, well, are we talking about price from a value perspective? Are we talking about price from a cost perspective and the margins associated with certain things? Are we talking about price from perceived value? And there's a lot of different ways you could cut it up. I don't think we need to get scientific for this episode. This one's just to have a little fun and just discussion around how things are costed, priced in the world of golf. So I think we just go with it and let's see where this takes us. So I want you to get us started with something. I'll challenge you. I'll say, give me one of your underpriced.
Underpriced. Okay. Well, yeah, before we get into things too, yeah, let's add the caveat. This is definitely a humorous episode. So take everything in half seriousness. That said,
hold us to everything we say here and judge us strongly.
Capitalism is a thing. Market demand is a thing. And I completely accept that. I do value, you know, a capitalistic system, at least somewhat. Sometimes maybe we go too far, but, you know, because ethos and intention and purpose matter.
I'm going to start calling you Robert Hunter. The amount of times you bring up economics, the only guy in golf ever that brought up economics more than the professor is Robert Hunter.
That's just to say, accept that it is an aspect of it. This is, you know, so what we say might contradict the economics of things. But man, underpriced. Wow. So I got scorecards. They don't charge you for scorecards. And how many scorecard collectors are there out there? I mean, I love a good scorecard. They could tack on, I mean, maybe it's baked in the greens fee, I don't know, but they could tack on $2, $5. I would still buy a scorecard every time I went into the pro shop, right? Like, hey, save the trees, right? Gary Player. Why is Gary Player not out here talking about, like, we should be charging for scorecards so people don't keep taking them and just, we have to cut down tree after tree to make scorecards. We keep that score on our phone. I mean, come on. What are we doing?
When you take something off my big board, I'm just going to throw it out there on top. So I didn't have scorecards on, but I definitely had golf tees, ball markers, and divot tools at top-notch clubs because of all the collectors, because of the, you know, handful Harrys dipping their paws into that jug.
Golf tees.
Oh, man. There's some egregious folks out there that just, like, you see that nicely put together display on the first tee or near the pro shop. And you always know the guy because when they start walking back to their bag, you hear they couldn't fit them all into their hand. Well, so you just start hearing tees that are hitting on the pavement behind them because they're literally dropping on their bag and they stuff them in the bag. That's uncalled for.
Do you know the secret to that? You take your tee bag to the club and bang.
That's sicko. That's sicko. That's problem.
That's kind of what I do.
No,
those bev tees, I grabbed a huge handful last time.
So, like, it's underpriced because it's free. Now, if you're a paying guest, a lot of these places have very high guest fees and accompanied or unaccompanied guest fees. So I understand that it's kind of included, but think about that for a second too. What if clubs were to, like, you know, let's bring down the cost of our fees by 1%, 2%. And then, hey, do you guys want the package of, because this is what they do overseas. This is in Scotland, you know it, right?
Oh, like,
if you want to buy some, they still have it. And these are nice clubs. I remember buying tees at Prestwick Golf Course. I needed them, right? They had a little
pack of 10, probably.
Dude, it was so tiny, like 5 tees, 1 ball marker and a divot tool for €10 or £10 or whatever. And I think about that, like, that could be something. But yeah, when it's free, that's nice. Because the other thing at a top-notch club, I mean, it is. Those are good woods. You know, there's, they're putting either bamboo's a popular one with those. There's, God, what's the one? I don't want to say persimmon. What's the?
Well, do they use birch sometimes?
Birch is great.
Yeah.
Nice break to it.
Oh, got to have that tee with the good break. It's got to be the break with, like, the full slanted snap in it, right? That maybe is hanging together.
How do you feel about plastic tee?
I'm out. No, I mean, I'll entertain sustainability. If you start making an argument there, I'm ignorant. Is it more sustainable or not? I'm like, I don't know, because wood ends up being recyclable and, like, breaks down and yada, yada, yada. You know, like, I'd be open to that argument, but without that argument, no. Like, our country club wants the plastic tees. I'm like, what kind of half-arse rodeo is this, right? Like, they try to paint scheme them too. Like, they try to paint scheme them and it just looks so dirty.
I will say this, there is an irony between not being willing to use a plastic tee but yet pulling out a driver that looks like an F1 vehicle with, like, you know, flashes on the side. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's, God, our game is filled with hypocrisy. So, like, I'm not a plastic tee. I also think plastic tees are a demented move. You know, go with wood. It just has a nice feel to it. It's a collector thing, but that is definitely calling the kettle black. Let's go overpriced.
Well, can I go first? Go shoot.
No, so that was my underprice. I just added to yours. So I'll go in the merchandise category.
All right, what are you doing? Don't steal mine. What do you got?
Golf socks.
Ooh.
Golf socks.
Okay.
I did some digging because I put this as my number one. Golf socks, Kevin, this might be a newsflash for many of our listeners. Golf socks are just socks. They're not specific to golf. They cover your feet. Some of them have a little flap in the back if you do the ankle ones. But other than that, they're just socks. And when you compare regular sock prices to what FootJoy and others, and thanks to our friends at Acushnet, but I'm just saying, I don't think the value, if we all went to value, is there. So I've actually pivoted away from golf-specific socks to just good socks. And I've saved somewhere in the ballpark of 40 to 50% on sock purchases. So slapping the word golf in front of a clothing item does not inherently make it more expensive. It's just a marketing thing. That's my first golf socks.
So is this a Tylenol migraine situation? Do you know that? Do you know that story?
No, I don't.
So Tylenol got in trouble because they had Tylenol migraine, which was actually just Tylenol
with
different, like a different description in it, and they charged differently for it, right? It was not fundamentally different than other stuff on the shelf, but yet they charged a different rate because it had the thing migraine on it. And this happens actually with male-female items all the time. You'll see an item geared towards female, branded towards female. It's priced differently, more expensive, but yet it's exactly the same as a male-branded counterpart.
You know, I'm just going to go take it off my board because my wife, I asked this question, overpriced, underpriced. She's a golfer, wanted to know her take. She said, I am appalled. My wife doesn't get appalled by many things, but appalled by the pricing at pro shops for female merchandise.
Yeah.
And she's talking about it in comparison to what we might pay for a polo or we might pay for, you know, they maybe it's like the pro shops are more geared towards a higher end brand, perhaps. So that could be part of it. But the reality is, I think you're right, Kev, like women's apparel, terribly overpriced in golf.
Yeah. I mean, it's often hideous too, right? In terms of like styles there, just not the level of detail or attention. But I'll jump my overpriced because just piggybacking off of that, on the male side of merchandise, golf shirts. Mm. Have golf shirts changed in the last 30 years?
The collars have changed size drastically. They go in and out, in and out. And now there's all of them available with differing styles. But yeah, not really. Performance material was quite an advancement. But I'd guess that's cheaper in production.
You would expect production costs, like relatively have gone down. Like not maybe in absolute cost, but relative to everything. Like the amount places are making and all that, right? Like relatively gone down. I do miss the cricket collars and the cricket long button down, right? We need more of that back in golf. So whoever's out there, do that and I'll pay whatever you're charging me for those shirts.
I don't see you wear those though. I don't see you wear the big collars, the 1970s.
If you give me one that's nice and fit and trimmed, I got a couple good cricket ones I like to wear. I don't wear them on the golf course because they're all cotton, and cotton does not play well down in Georgia.
You might remember in college I went through a nice stint of thrift store golf shirts from the 70s, and I had a TPC Scottsdale logo that was so sick. Just like it was so old school. I had the Golden Bear on Augusta Green.
I remember that one.
That was my favorite. I wore that probably two times a week. And God, what was the other 1970s?
Did you
shirt?
Have a penguin one or something like that? Original,
yeah, I think there was, I original think it was the original penguin. Yeah, yeah. And those were bitching, man. Those are cool shirts.
But
not performance material for sure. They were made of wool, probably.
And to that point, they were cool shirts. Like think of the shirts now you walk in, like not all of them, but most of them. $100 sitting there, nothing fancy, stylish. Half of them are hideous. And it's just a shirt. Like it's just a golf shirt that's been there. And it's like, it's probably a $30 shirt and you're going to $109 with the logo on it.
So two pushbacks on, because talk about hypocrisy. I run a merch shop here, and
I love merch. This episode is a walking contradiction. I admit that.
Professor's one of the best customers of the shop. So although he says it's overpriced, he don't mind paying it. I know that for certain. the logo is my first point on polos, right? Like, it's such a weird thing to say that, but people need those logos. You want it. It reminds you of a special place you've been. It's a little braggadocious for some people. You know, I don't love that, but here's a guy sitting in a pretty special hat logo on. And I guess I got the pollinator on my chest today, but it is that people see a lot of value in. And then secondly, I just wanted to bring the point up about brands and, like, you know, Nike charges what they charge because of their branding, and a lot of golf brands have done a good job to dictate that price, but it doesn't mean they're overpriced. It's just, I would just argue that people know of a certain quality when they pick up a certain shirt, when they have their brand. I've been surprised, the deeper I've gone into the merchandise world, how loyal people are to a brand.
Oh yeah.
And how loyal people are to, no, I know that one fits that way. I'm going to get six of them, yep. You know, and from six different golf courses I visit this year or whatever. But yeah, those are the only two things I'll say. But yeah, man, I've seen some clubs that are doing 140 for polos. Yeah. Like, it's getting silly.
And that's where, yeah, you are right on the value. And I'm sure, I think most people wear the stuff for the memory, not to just brag to other people. Now, it does feel good if you're wearing a, you know, Wingfoot shirt and someone's like, oh, you played Wingfoot. Certainly that feels good too. But the same thing, it's two things can be true at once, right? We can also step back and be like, wait, I paid $110 for this golf shirt that after 25 wears is going to be sweat stained and yada, yada, yada. Like, what am I doing? I got to put belts in that category. I had a belt run of a year and I looked at it. I'm like, my belt collection might be my biggest investment that I have in my life. And that's you're just being dumb, Kevin. You're just being, and I went on a no belt purchase roll for a long time.
Let's get to another underpriced one.
What you got?
I'm going to go with, and I have had experience with both these recently and others like it, munis and public access golf courses like Aiken Golf Club, Charleston Municipal, and let's throw the park in there in West Palm Beach. Those places, for the price they charged, so underpriced. And you know, you could also just say appropriately priced because everyone has access, but I'm just talking about it from the value I see as both a golfer playing the course, enjoying the course, but also the experience of playing really good template holes or playing really good greens. I mean, Aiken Golf Club, we were there in the winter, dude. Yeah. And it still rolled beautifully, better than some of the private clubs we visited, right?
Yeah.
So I paid $25, you know, like maybe 30. I can't remember exactly, but it is such value. And I think it's like, I get as excited for those places nowadays as I do for that, because think about how much harder it is for them to deliver that quality of golf to, whether it be they have to fight the city for certain funds or they have to work within a certain budget. I just think underpriced, overvalue. It's a great, I love places like that.
Nice. Yeah, I was going to kind of say some overseas golf courses I think could charge, you know, their guest fees could actually be a little bit more. So I'm going to leave that one off. Like, you know, if you get hosted at North Berwick, you're paying like £15 and they could probably charge a little more there and maybe cut back a little bit on outside. So I'm not going to wax on about that one because I actually don't feel that strongly about it either. But one I do feel a little bit more strongly about is golf course workers. So thinking, I'll specifically say PGA professionals as well as superintendents. When you think about the hours that they put in, the demands on them, the punching bags they have to play, they have to be, the thankless job a superintendent job is, like, I think often they're underpaid, undervalued, right? In terms of what they do and what they can bring, including like, setting
in, we're getting back to the union stance.
That's
union,
right.
Union, if
you,
more.
If you think of like the message and ethos you want to portray as a club, like in terms of what you want your superintendent to be and who you want your PGA pro to be, by paying them more, you set a certain tone, right? Like, you are a leader of this club. Like, you, I want you to have direction. I want you to have agency. Versus when you pay them very little, like, that positions them in a way where they don't feel like they have agency too. It's like, well, I'm not being valued at this level. So like, guess my job's just to keep the grass green and move along and not grow initiatives and do that sort of stuff. So I think, the work they put in and what they're expected to do, I think that whole culture needs change. And part of that is they need to be respected for their time, right? So like, either keep them to pay, but don't ask them to work the hours they do. I mean, superintendents are, right? They have to be there at 5 a.m. a lot of times, and they're working there all day. And pros, I mean, they don't get days off till Mondays, maybe.
Then there's no argument there. I think it's like, when I bring up the point of underpriced, that I see it as $100 to $150 of value at those places, and I'm paying $35 to $50. It's underpriced. But then on the flip side, and this is where the cost structure gets difficult, is like, if you're going to pay them more, you got to charge more. Is that going to equal the same demand? Is that going to give the same access to the person that's working as a waitress who wants to play a little after work? You know, like, it's just tricky. And your point's valid, though.
Increase pay, any solutions to these issues that we're bringing up, or like humorous issues that we're bringing up in a lot of ways, right, aren't just so simple. Just change their pay. Like, obviously, you think of the superintendent when we get on the whole of like, change their pay and also reduce inputs, right? Reduce the inputs required. Look at alternative inputs and look for adjustments there. Hey, that general manager, you're paying $350,000 a year. Is that really worth that, right? Like, but then that goes into the mission of the club. Like, why try to be everything for everyone across every spectrum, tennis, swimming, whatever, right? Like, the two clubs are at fault for all of this. They're building these bloated organizations that are trying to do 5,000 things and paying, when you have $1 million on payroll plus across your chef and your general manager and all that, like, it's on them. Like, it's their fault for doing that. And then this, for whatever reason, we, again, don't value the golf course enough within a country club structure. So the superintendent is one of the ones that gets a short end stick. Like, general managers, some of them have the best job in the world. Yeah, they know they're going to last 3 to 6 years and have to move on, but then they get their $150,000 severance and they move on, right? And they just keep doing that and keep people happy for a few years and move on. Like,
the world needs managers, Kevin. The world needs managers. What about, do you want to throw out an overpriced or an underpriced item?
I think we go overpriced now, right? I got one that I feel passionate about. Guest fees at private clubs, often overpriced. Now, this is definitely a context-specific place. Different places, some are very underpriced, but I think there are a lot of places that are overpriced where I look at this from this perspective. Two perspectives. One, I'm a member paying my dues, right? And those dues and everything there should be, the club should be balanced in a way where my dues are carrying the weight of the country club's expenditures and what they need to do, right? That should be, clubs should be operating that way. They often aren't, but they should be. So let's assume a club's doing that. You should not be looking at guest fees as a way of getting a lot more profit for the club to operate with. I think from country clubs, we're already exclusive. That's by definition exclusive. So adding a level of exclusivity beyond that of, we're also going to have high guest fees. So you can't even bring, so then you got to really ask, well, it's a $250 guest fee, $300 guest fee. Can my friend who's only casually in the golf, is that really worth them coming, right? Especially, and then also there's no family breaks and all that. Like, I'm paying to be a member here. Let me bring some guests up at affordable rate. Now, I get it. You don't want that abused, so put restrictions on it. You can only bring so many guests. A single guest can only come a few times a year. Like, I'd rather see those restrictions with really low guest fees than, we're having a guest fee problem. We're having a guest problem, so we're going to up it to $300 a guest. Like, some of those places, it's just like, no, we should want to share our country club, right? And we should not go out. If I bring four guests, I shouldn't be out, or three guests, a month of dues just to bring three guests. Like, it's just, I think it's a wrong message. It sets a wrong ethos at the club. Like, it should be like, you should be proud to bring guests up there and wanting to do it without ever having to think about, like, is this breaking my bank or is this breaking my guest bank? Like, that's just not a...
Yeah, I'll push back on it slightly, because I think generally I agree, but I think the one, if this was pure supply and demand, the top tier clubs are actually underpriced. If it's
that's why I said purely, this is con- contextual, they're also not even supply and demand underpriced often. They're also just underpriced in general. Like you go to a lot of top-notch clubs and it's only $100. Like
That's true, that's a steal. Some of them are, and maybe they already subscribe to what you're saying, Kevin, honestly.
So in my experience, the ones with the right ethos do. They aren't charging. They aren't looking at it as a way to get money from people. They're like, we're going to balance. We want to make a little money here, but we want people to be able to, we want anybody that loves golf to be able to play here.
Yeah. And so like, but let's be honest, the members that they have are so affluent and they ain't struggling at those clubs. Let's just be very clear. So they're able, they have the luxury of doing that if they want to charge $100 for a gas fee. So supply and demand for those, like the price would be probably well higher right now. I mean, I shared on a recent podcast back in the 1930s, there was 4,000 private clubs, 2024, 4,000 private clubs. Mm-hmm. So there's been no growth in that arena, which is wild. And so there's a high demand for great, great golf at that level because so much of it's private. But what I was going to pick on here is the mid-tier club, your local club that is run-of-the-mill. You know, maybe it's got some cool features. Maybe it had a renovation. I don't know. But those clubs that are charging between $300 and $500 for a definitely an unaccompanied fee, but I've seen some that are, you know, in the 200 for a company, got to get real. Like it's just not, the value isn't there. And when I look at those mid-tier clubs and with the growth we've seen on the public side, and we need to celebrate that more. Like I'll use Chicago as the example, cause I'm most familiar with it. Chicago has, there's been 4, 5, 6, $8 million renovations of Park District golf courses, not Chicago Park District, but you look at the Park District surrounding it. And there are courses that are, quite frankly, as well conditioned and as good a pace of play and as good an experience as a mid-tier private club. And you're paying $70, $75, mm-hmm. $80, maybe $100 with a cart. Whew. That's a tough ball game to compete in when you're charging $300 for your very comparable experience. So I pick on the mid-tier clubs a little bit. And the last thing I'll say with your point here, that revenue line is not insignificant. And if a club can find a happy medium, that's instead of like disagree with you entirely, if they could find a happy medium of just a nice 150, 200-ish price for a good value. And again, that's I'm mostly thinking unaccompanied here. But if they can find that good value and it really supports the club's bottom line in a very, which guest fees, and you can look this stuff up, all these 501c, I can't remember, it's not C3, C7, C6. All private clubs have this stuff available online. It sometimes doesn't get to this level of detail, but you can see the guest fee line. And when you see it, it's significant, man. It's a big dollar. And so it's like, if they grow that, then maybe they're not inflating all the costs for their members. They're not going to $100,000 initiation fees. The club's culture kind of changes drastically, right? So like, I don't know. We're getting heavier than I wanted to on this episode with this stuff. But it's a real balance that a lot of clubs are starting to struggle with, which I think it's a good struggle. I'm glad that we're like, at least people are looking at this. Also, overseas is wrestling with this right now.
Yeah,
they've had a third year of tremendous increases. Shout out UK Golf Guy for his published article on that. So their membership fees aren't going up, but they're charging us Americans and Asian travelers a lot more than they were 4 years ago.
Yeah, and I think like the point there is, right, you said it's a balance, and I think that's the perfect way to capture it, where I was really picking on just a small subset of the group. That is a significant subset of the group, because like the UK is a good example. Yeah, they charge significant guest fees, especially unaccompanied. We say significant, but I mean, you compare it to some places over here, and the significance is a loose term there, because it's like £300 to play Royal County Down or whatever, I think on that list, right? And you're like, that's not significant at all. Think of like Royal County Down is in the list of great golf courses in the world. Significant would be $800, not $300, right? Like let's be clear, like no offense to Firestone, but they're charging $300 too, right? Like I think that's accompanied. So like in the UK, well, they balance that by having incredibly low local and accompanied rates, right? The balance is actually there, where a lot of our group, that significant group I'm talking about, there's no balance, right? Like you're paying $200 for your guest fee. You're paying $1,200 a month in dues. You're getting assessed. Initiation's $50,000. Like there is no balance. We're building pickleball courts. We're doing this. We're doing that. There is no balance. It's just like charge more, spend, charge more. Like let's make, you know, $500,000 in guest fees over this time period. And we'll do that to build more. Like, yeah. We're not actually going to do that to lower our cost to our members other than not charging them to build something, right? That's the only balance that's occurring. I think I want to see more balance in that.
It becomes the snake that's eating itself, right? Because the fact on the private side of these guest fees, accompanied and unaccompanied, the guest fees are also trying to create value for the overall membership, meaning it's so expensive to play, I might as well become a member, which, you know, that just, it ebbs and flows with that. And I don't think it's the healthiest balance, but there's got to be some balance of it. And they're not easy. So,
You got an overcharge. I think.
Oh, yeah. I got overcharged for other ones, man.
Yeah. What's another overcharge?
I'm going to take it to a different direction. Actually, why don't I just throw this one out as like, I couldn't place this one. So I'll throw this one out. Paying for a large bucket of balls versus bay time. I was trying to think in my head. So you know how this has all evolved with the emergence of Topgolf and the simulators. It used to be, you know, when you and I were growing up, what'd we do? We went to the range. You buy a bucket of balls, large bucket. I think I always remember 5 or 7 comes to mind. So at Golf Improvement Center, I think a medium was out on Route 18. Shout out Golf Improvement Center, now a nursing home, which was very fitting from their clientele that was there when I was 13. But it was either $5 for a medium or $7 for a large. And I'd pay that and, you know, go grind it out on the range. But nowadays, a lot of these Top Tracer facilities, a lot of, you know, the Top Golf, obviously, the 5-irons and your simulators, they're charging by bay time.
Right.
And they're charging somewhere, I don't know, I've seen a bunch of different prices depending on where you're at, but between $30 and $50 an hour for that bay time. I mean, it's a better model for sure for the business to have that on that side, right? But I don't know about buckets. Are buckets, what take you? What category am I putting this? Overpriced, underpriced?
I almost used this as either overpriced or underpriced. I didn't have a good answer because I was thinking of driving ranges and like the Bobby Jones one and all that. And like, I think for a lot of them, that is an important revenue generator. Like Bobby Jones, I think, is one of those places that is. And so like I hesitated saying it's overpriced because it is critical. And I'm like, do I have a problem with them? Because I looked at that, like if you buy a large bucket, you're there 45 minutes to an hour. Is 10, 15, 20 bucks, is that actually a bad price for that amount of time you're taking up there when only one person can be in that spot? So it's not like they can have more people or anything like that. I was like, well, I go, honestly, I probably think it's one of those things I'll plead enough ignorance to say I don't have an opinion on either direction. But I think, comparing to the bay thing, I might say like, well, now you are starting to get like $50 for a bay. Like if it's not a simulator bay and it's just like to go hit balls and like versus going somewhere, I don't know. That maybe starts feeling overpriced. I honestly don't have an opinion right now on it.
Yeah, I mean, that bucket, where I go underpriced was that bucket when I was a kid. And the buckets now, the places that still do buckets, like Diversity Driving Range in Chicago, Illinois, people pick on that. People pick on Bobby Jones too, down in Atlanta with the price of a bucket of balls. I can't even tell you what exactly it is, but both are in the 20s.
Yeah.
And that for, I don't know, 100 balls, it definitely is up for debate is why I brought it up. So I think, I'd say back in the day, tons of value, right? I was paying $5 and getting 140 balls or something. Like, that's wild. But we're old men now, Professor. I think times have changed.
Yeah, I think, that is tough. When you start getting the 20s, I don't know. Maybe that changes my opinion. But you're especially in the middle of the city. I think of the two ranges you identified. You're in the middle of inner city where, like, how do you survive, you know, not charging that? I don't know how you could even possibly survive without doing it.
You got anything?
Pricing's so complex, right? Like no price exists in isolation, and there's 5,000 factors that go into a single price, including the prices of other things.
you got anything else on underpriced or throw out just one of your favorites? So, we're here at the end of the hour. So
the one that irks me, and I'll say it's overpriced. I don't think it is, but it is to me, golf balls. And that is purely because
how dare you?
One, I am how very dare
you? Our friends at Titleist, they don't deserve this.
So let me
Kevin.
Explain, what right? Two doing? There's two factors here. One, everybody that knows me, like buying stuff is huge friction for me. Like every purchase I make is a process of friction, no matter how much I want it or don't want it.
Of course.
So that's competing factor one. Like very psychology wise, my brain hurts on spending for stuff. Two, I got to play competitive golf for a while. You know what we got in competitive golf? Free golf balls.
It ruined you. It ruined
you
for life.
All of a sudden, I'm done. I go through my stash of Titleist Pro Vs that I got through college, right? You know, I walked with like 20 dozen that I'd saved up. I get done with those and all of a sudden I have to go buy and I'm like, I'm a poor grad student. It's like, wait, these are $44 or $48 or whatever they were. And, you know, you step on that first tee, the Arizona State, the Karsten course, I pump one into the parking lot, right? And I'm like, that was like $3 I pumped over, or $4 I just pumped. For a grad student, that literally, like losing one golf ball was equivalent to my lunch. Like that was, right? You're just like, okay, I can spend $5 on lunch today. I just hit a golf ball in the parking lot. I am
my advice.
Wendy's drive-through dollar menu is all I'm getting. So golf balls are hurt.
My advice is play a golf ball that allows you to not stress about your lunch. That's just my only advice for anybody out there. That is not a good mental thought. Standing over a golf ball,
it's terrible.
Was this one, it's $6. You know, that could be a half of a foot long at Subway. But yes, yeah, obviously that's in the Price is Right discussion. We're at the end of the hour. I had a bunch of others. I'll just kind of shout them out and let the listeners think about. So in my underpriced column, I had courses that charge a walking rate 50% less than the riding rate. I've started to see that more often. I'm like, that's weird, you know?
They charge a walking rate. That's
50% less. Literally half the price of what it would cost to ride with a cart. And one of them I can think of was actually a very walkable golf course. And I was like, that just doesn't equate, right? If someone comes with a push cart. Anyways, that was just one. Here's one for you. Watching, this is in my underpriced column, something I get a lot of value out of. Watching the back nine of a major on TV with no commercials.
Ugh.
I mean, is there anything sweeter? Talk about underpriced. Talk about the value I get. You know, the term is coming down to it. You're watching a beautiful golf course with the world's best players.
Yeah.
That is undervalue. Another underpriced, USGA championships. I mean, talk about competing for your nation's championships, getting in those. I think they still, you know, went up last couple years, but
yeah,
I still think it's
$50 or something. 175,
maybe
170.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good for
playing in four ball amateur. Yeah. Good for them.
And don't raise your prices.
Yeah. That deserves a shout out. And then I was going to pick on this, our friends in Georgia and our friends in Chicago for my last one. Handicaps in Chicago are overpriced. Handicaps in Georgia are underpriced. CDGA, GSGA, I don't know what you guys are doing differently, but there is a 50% difference between the two of those. And I'd like some answers. I'd like to know why, but maybe some efficiencies, maybe some scale too. I don't know. Maybe they're handling things that are different at each, but yeah, that was just a quick observation. $50 in Illinois for your handicap and only 20 went up this year. It was 25 last year. It's 29 this year for a handicap in the state of Georgia. So there's my list, Professor.
All right. I'll give one last one. Underpriced. I'm a fan of flexible pricing this. A nice cold drink after a round with your playing partners.
Oh,
like if they could walk in that first drink after the round, they could be like, hey, it's $20 for the first drink. Then we're back to $5. I would pay that $20 every time to sit there on the porch with an ice mug of, I don't care, Miller Lite all the way to Creature Comforts Tropicana, Calia, and sit there and talk about the round and reminisce about missed shots and made shots and needling each other. I think that's way, way undervalued.
Here, here. Good place to end it. Actually, one last one for our friend Dr. Nico Daris, Golf Blueprint. Yeah. That's where all this started. His one that it started with was, I think there was some cart chatter. But
definitely
then,
cart chatter.
Alignment sticks. Alignment sticks that you can buy at the Home Depot that are, you know, exponentially more expensive for the golf branded ones. That was his overprice that got this whole discussion started. Kind of a fun one, kind of a lighthearted one today, but I enjoyed it, Professor. Thanks for diving in. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And again, thanks to Titleist for support of the podcast, support of New Club Golf Society. Our members have been through the fitting process just recently in Chicago, and it's about the three Ds: distance control, dispersion control, descent angle. I learned a lot through that fitting with my certified Titleist fitter. You will too. Check them out at titleist.com. Professor, thanks for the chat this morning. You have a great rest of your weekend.